there's a rough plan for the week. I'll make a little note on Grover and correct my mistake of Friday morning. And then I'm going to add the little thing that I was not going to do, but I was playing at the weekend. I said, oh, maybe I'll mention this about physics simulation. How do we do this? And just give you a little flavor. So we've seen an algorithm like factoring, which has importance for cryptography, Grover, general search, and this is more a physics type thing. And I'll say, here's a little bit of an idea of how things work. And then I'll turn to talk about open quantum systems. And maybe it was motivated by a talk I heard at IQC last week of somebody being able to simulate or find more efficiently with a quantum computer the thermal state of a system with some constraint on the Hamiltonian. And I said, oh, then I should. And I thought it was neat that the quantum computer can do this more efficiently than a classical computer, even if it's in the classical regime. So I'll talk a little bit about this, going to open quantum systems, and a consequence of having open quantum system is that if we don't control what the environment does to our quantum computer, it will become unreliable. And lecture two tomorrow and Wednesday, I'll talk about quantum error correction. I hope to give you a rough idea of how it works, go into a few details, a few examples in details. And part of this, so here will be the 3-bit code for correcting phase, the 9-bit code of Shor. And on Tuesday, I'll talk about stabilizer codes. And I think you have an exercise on toric codes, either in one of the tutorial or one of the homework, and I cannot remember which one. And the toric code turns out to be related to the paper in NMR that you've looked at, kind of anionic systems. It's some form of anionic codes for a very small number of qubits, which is what we can do in the lab. Thursday, we'll talk about QKD and give you an idea of what is QKD, how it works. And on Friday, I'll talk about private quantum channel. So private quantum channel is, in some sense, an analog of QKD. In QKD, we want to establish a key, a classical key between Alice and Bob using quantum means. And here, so we're really transmitting something which is classical from one location to the other. And here we want to transmit a quantum state between two places. And we don't want an eavesdropper to learn anything about that quantum state. So this is what I'm going to try to do. We'll see how far we go. Before we go to physics simulation, remember Grover. The idea of Grover is that we have a data set and piece of data. One is Mark, called Omega. And we've seen the algorithm of choosing a state, which is superposition of 0, 1 to n, 0 up to n minus 1. And if we choose a state like this with amplitude on all states, then there's a small overlap with the state which corresponds to the chosen item. And we know what is the angle of this, which is theta. Then we constructed.
Sorry, isn't that omega is the state that we want to find?
Yep.
But then how do we know the n?
So I'm going to give you a little example in a second. You'll see that. So we constructed two operators, which is a rotation around omega. And even if we don't know omega, we can do that rotation using the black box, which take the input and say if it is 0 or 1 for that particular input. And then, which is really kind of a reflection around that. And the operator V is a reflection around the state psi. So the basic idea is that we take a reflection around omega, and this one is a minus, so you bring the state there, and we do a reflection around here, and go there, and we do a rotation, the reflection around omega again, go there, rotation around psi, and then we go slowly towards this. Once we know theta, then we know how many iterations we need to do, because we want to have theta equal to pi over 2, and then we can find how many iterations do we do. So to give you so you found the answer to your question. Good. Now here's the example. I gave an example with 2-qubit. When I did it on the weekend, I realized that in 2-qubit, it becomes trivial because the state is in this direction, and when we do twice a rotation, we arrive to this straight away. So I added one more qubit to make it not as trivial. So here's the example I wanted to do. Let's assume that omega is equal to 7. Okay, this is a piece that you don't know, but you, if you use the black box, you would be able to know. But what we don't want to do is to do n trial. Okay. And here we've shown that we can do square root of n trial when we do this superposition. So the state psi is equal to 1 over square root of 2 of 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 plus 6 plus 7 plus 8. And Aggie told me that sometimes I write too small. So when I write too small, I can distribute a piece of chalk and then they throw it back to me and say, write bigger. And when she said this, I was far away and I was looking at this, and indeed it's a bit small. So remind me if I kind of start to write too small. Okay? So now we do UF pi, and then I'm not going to rewrite it all the way. And what this is that it changes the superposition to a minus here, right? And now the tricky part, which I did do very well the other day, is now when we do the V on there, so which is 2 psi minus 1 of UF psi, which is there. Okay? So here's my claim. This part multiplied by this will give me a state which is proportional to psi. And then you have to say, what is the coefficient in front of this? So because there's two of those, it makes this squared. There's a factor of 2 here. And then there is the overlap of this state psi with the one with the sign change. You can go and count this. There's 8 of them, but there's a minus there. So if I'm right, this should be 7 minus 1 divided by 2 square root of 2. Okay. And then minus the state which is here. And I'm not going to write it, but it's the one with the minus up there. Okay. So you have this state with some coefficient in front. And then you have the state at the bottom with the minus in there. And you want to add certain things, okay? Because we have a minus here, and all the amplitude of here are plus, except of the 7, this thing is going to decrease the amplitude of all of those, right? And it's going to increase the amplitude of this one. So, yes. So, which is not surprising, when we boost, we make this rotation, okay? These two reflection, we end up with psi in this direction. It increased the amplitude in there at the expense of decreasing the one this is. The thing which is perpendicular shrinks, and you're going to do this again. And you can now you can see it from these two things, and then if you go and add all these terms, so this is 6, and then you get things. My claim is that this terms here is 3 over 4 square root of 2 psi minus 1 over 2 square root of 2. The terms 1 plus 2 plus 2 minus 7. And then what we get is in front of all the terms except of 7, you'll get an amplitude which will be 1 over 4 square root of 2, this term minus this. And then in terms of 7 is this plus this. And then you get an amplitude which is 5 over 4 square root of 2. So you see that this one has been boosted a little bit. And then you go and do it again. And you get it again until this becomes essentially zero, and this one becomes essentially one. Okay. When you have a large number, you won't get exactly maybe on omega. But this, you don't, it doesn't really matter, because once you have an approximate of omega, you can go to the black box and do a few trials to be sure that it is the right one. Okay, so this is the idea of Grover. So what was essential here is the ability of construct these operators and construct an initial state which has a very small overlap with omega. And even if you don't know omega, as you've just mentioned, you don't know what omega, because psi is the sum of all the states, it has to be to have an overlap with omega. It's very small, and you just amplify that. Good? Oh, yeah. Okay, so physics simulation. So the basic idea is, can we simulate a generic Hamiltonian? And then you have this wonderful quantum computer which has 1 and 2 qubit gates. And so if you have this, you know that the final density matrix is equal to U on psi, where U is e to the, is there a minus here?
Yes.
So I think there's a minus here. The integral of h dt on psi initial. Okay. Let's assume that the Hamiltonian is piecewise constant. So this will be e to the minus delta t h over h bar. And for once, I put my h bar in here. Many years ago, I was giving a talk, and I was writing things like this for the trace of AB. And indeed, there is a resemblance between my TR written fast and H bar. So I'm talking for about 30 minutes, and somebody says, "Why are you putting H bar everywhere?" So that was my trace. So I do apologize of having brought h bar here. Usually it's equal to 1. Don't confuse it with the trace right now. So here's how we do this. So we just take this small piece of Hamiltonian, and we try to build this Hamiltonian with quantum circuits. So I'm going to give you one example. In fact, I'm going to give you 2 examples. One of them is, let's suppose that the Hamiltonian that you want to simulate, h for simulate, is z1, z2, z3. Okay? How do we construct this? And the second one that I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you how to simulate fermions with qubits. So qubits have a commutation relation. Fermions have an anti-commutation relation. So can you simulate fermions with qubits? If our quantum computer is universal, it should be. So there must be a way. It has to be efficient. So I'll just show you how to do this. Okay, so how do we build this? So you remember in an MR, so we'll assume that we have 1 and 2 qubit gates, and the interaction will be Zi, Zj between our qubits, okay? And in an MR, the Hamiltonian is always in, so we can have any kind of coefficient. You leave your Hamiltonian run for a certain amount of time. And what I want to show you is to use this between my 3 qubit, I'll build a quantum circuit so that in a certain time lapse, my Hamiltonian will look like that. Okay? So how do we do this? So if we start with Z1, Z2, which means also that we have the unit density matrix for my third qubit, if you do a rotation around Y of the second qubit around Y by 90 degrees, what will this operator look like? I take the second qubit, so you remember your Bloch sphere. Z, Y, X, I do a rotation around Y by pi over 2, I start with Z. That's it. So this goes to Z, X, 1. Now I'm going to do a rotation. Wow. Now we're going to couple these two qubits. And if you remember the NMR lecture last Monday a week ago, that transformed an operator X, tensor 1, to something else. It's going to tensor, so it's a pi over 2. So if there would not be this, then it would take X to Y. Okay, but there is this piece. So how do we calculate this? So you do e to the minus pi over 4, z1, z2, sorry, z2, z3, and then I see my writing is very small. You haven't thrown me something before I change it, so I'm happy. x1, e, the plus is 0, minus pi over 4, u dagger, z2, z3. This is 1 over square root of 2 of 1 minus z2, z3, z1, x2, y3, and with a plus. And then you'll see that the 1 and the z on both sides gives you minus sign and cancel, and this will get down to 1 and z3. Okay. In the tutorial, I think, did you do one of those? No? Okay. So out of the course, by looking at this, then you can find playlist. So when you do a coupling, it's a rotation. It brings a z because there's the extra z in there. And it has a similar rotation as a rotation of the z-axis. Okay, so now with this, we are with z1, z2, y2, z3. What do I do so that it looks like this? So I have to change the y2 into a z2. So what is the rotation? I have a y2. I wanted to bring it there. Rotation around X of X2, and then I have Z1, Z2, Z3. Okay? So in order to do this, I have to sandwich things on both sides as I wrote here. So my claim is e to the minus delta Z1, Z2, Z3 is equal to e to the minus I, pi over 4, x2, e to the plus I, minus I, pi over 4, z2, z3. When I put operators x2 like this, it means I have unit matrix on 1, unit matrix on 2. So they are really kind of three operators. But it takes too long to write, so I'm not going to write them right now. And I have e to the plus minus I, pi over 4, y2, e to the minus delta, z1, z2, And then we do the other side. Okay, so if we put this together, multiply all these pieces, you're gonna get something of this form. If you put and calculate all of this, you'll get something of this form, and then you rotate the y by an x, and then you get something of this form. So what does the quantum circuit look like? I'm gonna make it just a little longer. Okay. You start from this side here. X2, we do a rotation here. X2, 90. Then we have a certain amount of time for the ZZ interaction between 2 and 3. Z2, Z3, 90. Then the next one is a rotation of this qubit, Y, 90. Oh, I have a minus sign there, which is wrong, so that should be a minus here, minus 90 degree or around the minus axis. Then we let this evolution Z1, Z2, or time delta t, and then we do the other way. Y9t, Z, this one was a minus 90, this was a plus 90, and then rotation of x to 90. Okay, so now we have the quantum circuit, which simulates a particular Hamiltonian. And then if you want to think about any kind of other Hamiltonian, then you have to construct it, but at least now you know the trick how to do this. So if you have an initial state for here you want to do, at the end you will have an Hamiltonian which goes like this. If you would have, instead of ZZZ, you would have some X and Y, you know how to transform it just with one qubit gate. Okay? So, have you ever seen fermions? And I really mean, well, you've seen fermions, or you've seen the effect of fermions, but the math of fermions. Okay? Okay, so the main point that I want to show is, suppose with fermions we have operators which are creation, annihilation operators, so just that for different indices, we're not looking at commutation, but anti-commutation, so AI AJ plus AJ AI is equal to zero. So it's a little bit like commutation, but there's a plus sign, and that comes because of a phase which is different for fermions. And then you have AI AJ is equal to dagger is equal to delta IJ. Okay? So in the operators that we've played with, X, Y, and Z, if you kind of try to kind of pass them, or kind of we have one after the other, they do, there's the commutation with the minus. So we have this relationship that x, y is equal to 2i, z. we want to kind of use these operators for many qubits so that suddenly we can define a set of operators which behaves that way. Okay? Now, a consequence of this is that fermions can have only two states, okay, and such that if we're, let's call the first fermion, A on 1 is going to give us the state 0, and A1 on 0 gives us 0, and if we have the A dagger on 0 is equal to the state 1, and A1 dagger on the state 1 gives us 0, which is different than what you see on, for example, boson or harmonic oscillators. So here's my claim, is that if you define a set of operator A1, which is equal to sigma 1, 1, A1 dagger is equal to sigma plus of the first qubit, where sigma minus is equal to x plus iy, and sigma plus is the one with the minus. Okay? So now we have to, if you look at these operators and you put them in there, you will see that indeed you get the right commutation relation. And now we want, the tricky part is to be sure that we have, when, what happens when we have two of those. So how do we define A2 and A2 dagger so that suddenly these operators here have this anti-commutation relation? And then you can play a little bit around and you can see what other people have thought of in the past and so on, and what you'll find out that if this is sigma z, 1, 2, and then to go to the third one, okay, where here, instead of just z, I put sigma z, which is the same thing as what I usually call sigma, the z operator, but just consistency with this one, I put in there. And now you can know, you can guess what will be a to the 4. So you can change the commutation relation of your algebra just by taking a subset of these operators of a tensor product of all poly operators, which are of that form. Mm-hmm. So let's just check. And today I hope it's going to work. So we want to show that this obeys this relationship. OK. So this is equal to A1, A2 plus A2, A1. And A1 is equal to sigma 1, sigma minus on the first one, sigma z on the first one, and sigma minus on the second qubit, plus sigma z on the first qubit, sigma minus on the first qubit, and sigma minus on the second qubit. So this pulls out, and we're left with these two pieces here. And let's see how does that work. So the matrix sigma 1, which is equal to x plus iy, remember that this is 0, 1, 1, 0. And this one has the minus I, so it's 1, 0, minus 1, 0. And if you multiply these terms, you should get that this is 0, 1, 0, 0. there should be a factor of 1/2 in there. Okay, so now we get this, 0, 0, like this, 1, 0, 0 minus 1, plus 1, 0, 0 minus 1, 0, 1, 0, 0. And if I did the thing right, I get a 0, 0, minus 1, 0, 0, and plus 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, which is equal to 0. Yeah. Good. So you've shown that these families of operators that have, and you can generalize. And then you can go and show that indeed when you have the dagger, then it sums up to 1. We have the same. Okay. So we've shown the algebra of the fermionic system can be implemented. Now, how do we implement these operators? So suppose that you start with your qubits, you have x or y or z in those. So you remember that sigma minus is x plus y. So let's assume that there's the x version of a plus a dagger is equal to x. A minus a dagger will be equal to I with the factors of I. So if I give you x for the third qubit and you want to find the fermionic operator with z's before, so you want to transform this to z1, z2, x3. How would you do this? You go up. I've given an example with z1, z2, z3. How to transform z1, z2 to z2, z2, z. How to transform z1, z2 to z1, z2, z3. And I've shown you how to do this. Here you would do the same thing. So you are going to transform x3 to something which looks like 1, z, y, 3, 1, 2, 3. Okay, by doing a z2, z3 interaction, you're going to flip this one to an x. By doing a z rotation, you'll flip this one to an x, and then apply z1, z2, and then you'll get the other z there. So here's how you kind of build these operators. And so now you'll have a little circuit that every time you want to have that operator coming in your Hamiltonian or whatever, you know how to build it. Okay, so that's the basic idea between physics, behind physics simulation or building these operators is you have a universal set, and then by playing with them, put this together. Now the neat thing is you've seen it, how to do it with an MR, okay, last week. Molecular control set. Now you've seen how to build it up, and you've seen in the paper how to do things which are anionic. So here you just do the anionic with a phase of pi when you rotate, and you can see how to do it in the more general out of the DNMR paper, which is one particular implementation. Now, in any simulation, you also need an initial state. And this is a place where we're a little bit lost when you do simulation. If you say, let's do it, start with a thermal state or very high temperature, as I just mentioned, people know how to do this. But if we are in a place where quantum mechanics is important, we don't always know how to efficiently get to the initial state. We might start with an initial state, which is all these qubits in the state 0, but what it corresponds to physically, it's not always clear. As finding the ground state of a generic Hamiltonian is not something that we know how to do. So there's a little bit of a piece in there which we don't totally know. Quantum computers are good to evolve quantum states, but not necessarily to find one particular state in general. So maybe there is an equivalent of the Church principle. Church Turing principle, which says that any physically reasonable state can be approximately done on a quantum computer by some method. Maybe if you want a thermal state, we'll simulate that way we do in the lab. We make it interact with some environment, and magically it is going to go there. But maybe when we go in the lab, we are biased. The states which takes a lot of time to equilibrate, or the one which don't take that much to equilibrate, we can use. But the ones which take a lot of time, we just don't use because we don't have the time to do it. So maybe there's a funny piece there where it's only, it might be things that we just cannot do. Okay, so that is what I wanted to say about simulation. And now I want to pass to quantum operations. So the basic idea is, when I mentioned to you simulation up here, I said, oh, let's solve the Schrodinger equation. Schrodinger equation assumed that our physical system, our quantum system, is isolated. What happens when it is not? And the Schrodinger equation is not being obeyed. It's replaced by some more general equation, which is described by the evolution of the density matrix. Okay? So a quantum operation is a map that sends density matrices to density matrices. Okay. And here's, we're going to write this operation as some kind of curly E. Okay? And we're going to say that quantum operation should have a certain set of property, be linear. And by this, we mean that E on two density matrix with coefficient P and Q is a property. And we want this. It's the form of the superposition principle that comes in there. Okay. We want it to preserve the trace. Okay, so the trace and you'll notice that I try to be writing my TR as clearly as possible, is a trace of rho. That's good. I brought a smile to your face by making that comment about my trace. Preserve positivity. So the density matrix can always be diagonalized. And the diagonal terms correspond to the probability of being in a state. This is the probability it has to be positive. So the positivity has to be, which is written as rho greater or equal to zero, that means the eigenvalues of rho have to be equal to zero, implies that when we apply to a quantum operation, this is also true. Okay? And there's a last one. And this one is the most unintuitive. And quite often I've asked people, kind of give me an intuition about this piece, which is complete positivity, or being completely positive. Okay. And this says that not only we want this to be positive, okay, but we want this on, so if we extend the system to a larger space, that this map times the identity for the other system on rho is also positive. Also positive. Okay? And I'll give you one example of something which doesn't preserve complete positivity, but I cannot give you real intuition of, if you look at a map, how easy it is to find. So the transpose. If we take the transpose and we transpose the off-diagonal term of one qubit state, it will look positive still. But if we look at the transpose of the first qubit with respect to this, will give me something which looks like okay. And now it is not obeyed, and this has negative eigenvalues. So this, the transpose by itself, is not a quantum operation which is allowed. So, theorem that I will state, but not prove, the following are equivalent. One. If this transformation, this quantum operation, if it is, it is a completely positive trace preserving map. Two, we can write rho as the sum of AI rho AI dagger, sum over I, with the constraint that AI dagger AI is equal to the unit operator. And these operators are called Krauss. Operator, as Krauss is the first one who wrote these quantum operations in that form. Three, there exists a unitary U on a larger quantum system. So you can double the size of your quantum system in such that this map is equal to the trace of this larger system of U rho. U dagger. Okay? So you guys see behind this? So as a quantum circuit, here's what we think. If we have start with rho with a state zero, we evolve it to a unitary transformation. These degrees of freedom we just ignore, we trace over. So this is my artistic version of a bucket, and you just throw your qubit in there. And when you look at the effect on the first qubit, is this quantum operation that we're talking about. Yeah. So let's look at a few example of those.
You trace over this extra qubit that you added.
You what?
The trace over B is the trace over this extra qubit that you're just throwing out.
That's it. So the depolarized channel is one that we'll see quite often. It's some kind of generic channel. In fact, any one qubit channels, we know how to transform it by doing a few things into this depolarizing channel. And we're going to use this as the form of error that comes when error correction comes in for a generic type of error. Okay, so It's 1 minus p rho plus p over 3 x rho x plus y rho. You guys are supposed to throw me something if I write small. Okay, so probability 1 minus p, we don't do anything with our qubit, and the probability of we apply xx, yy is easy, one after the other. Okay? Now, we have our blocks here. You remember that the surface of the block sphere is a set of pure states. Do you guys know, if I give you a state rho, how do you know if it's a pure state?
It has to be on the surface of the sphere.
Operationally. That's it. If you take trace rho squared is equal to 1, then it will be pure. If trace rho squared is smaller than 1, then you're inside. Okay? So a quantum operation in this way is going to take the sets of all pure states and then map them to a sphere, but with a smaller radius. And how small? Well, it depends what is the value of 1 minus p. Okay? So it takes this sphere and then kind of make you something which is in the middle. And the size of this is related to 1 minus p. If p is equal to 0, we should have the sphere. And if p is equal to 1, this is 0, and you're straight in the middle. Because if this turns out that it randomizes your state totally. Yeah. Dephasing, sometimes called decoherence. Do you remember what a map of decoherence would look like? If you have a density matrix, it would take it, the pure states, and it takes the off-diagonal terms, okay, and make them shrink. And depending how much phasing you have, well, either you're kind of remaining next to the big sphere, or you go, okay? And this map is rho is equal to 1 minus p times rho plus z rho z. So what does it look like in the blocks here?
Projects it onto the z-axis.
Look at this sphere. Tell me what the sphere looks like when it shrinks.
So make it an ellipse. The z-axis, the z-direction is the same.
Okay. Good. So the state 0, 0, or the state 1, 1 don't move. So we know that these ones don't move. And then the one which has the highest amount of this are going to shrink most. So it becomes an ellipse if we project it. But as a sphere, it becomes like some form of American football, but with the two little pieces. Something which is like this. So it shrinks the middle, and it has this invariance of rotation around z. Okay? A Last one. Amplitude damping. And so it's relaxation to the ground state. Okay, and then rho is going to go to A0 dagger plus A1 dagger, where A0 is equal to 100 square root of 1 minus gamma. And A1 is 1 square root of gamma 0, 0. So this is the operation. And I'm going to give you, we've written here somewhere, a U. And there's an easy way of deriving these operators, which seems to be a bit kind of weird. Suppose that you have an atom, which is in a state 0, or the excited state. And there's a probability of this atom to emit a photon, so that the electron, if it is in a ground state, an excited state, would relax to the ground state. So you would say the state of 0 of the electron and the state of 0 of the photon has to go to the state 0, 0. If the state of the electron is excited, and we always assume that the state of the photon is in its in the ground state, so it's really in vacuum, then this gives you an amplitude of having remaining in the same state plus an amplitude that the electron decays, and 1 in the photon. And then the amplitude, okay, if I relate it to this, should be if gamma is equal to 0, we remain in there, and I think the amplitude is of this form, okay? So if you take this as the unitary transformation of your system in here, make the trace over the photon, the claim is you're going to get back these operators. Okay. What does it look like in our block sphere? Okay, let's take a limit. Gamma is equal to 1 is going to make us go to the ground state. Or when we start with the state 0 in here, you remain there. So this point has to be there. If gamma is equal to 0, it remains the same, like this. If gamma increases, then the state 1 is going to shrink at some point to a value like this. And so what you get is some form of distorted ellipsoid with one element of 1 has shrunk to here, and one element is 0, and it is spherically symmetric with respect to the Z rotation. Okay, so independent X and Y, so that this thing is kind of turning like this. Now, this is relaxation to the ground state. If you want to have something which looks like relaxation to a thermal state, then you would have to add two more operators. So in some sense, this takes your system and tries to bring it to here. If you have another set of two operators here, instead of relaxing to 0, we'll relax to 1, it's going to make it jump. And if you adjust the parameter, you can say, here's the place where the thermal state is. So you had two operators, which this is a 0, where the gamma is down there, and these things are flipped. which brings it, and you can get the thermal state out of this. Okay, there is 3 minutes left. On Friday, I ask you how many parameters you need. So I was hoping I would go there today, because I'm gonna, my next slide is generalized measurement, and then we'll mention tomography a little bit. And so when we do process tomography, you'll get this set of number. But I'm gonna give you a hint. If you're really good at geometry, the generic quantum operation takes the surface of the sphere and makes some form of ellipsoid, okay? All the ones that we've had here are symmetric around the z-axis, but in general, it will not be. So you can make them in certain shape. So how many parameter we need to describe? The sphere going to some ellipsoid in that Bloch sphere. And if you can find this, then you are you found the right number. So I'm not going to give you the number yet, but I can. There's a few things you can start to think about. Okay, where's the center of this ellipsoid? That's three of them. There's an ellipsoid. An ellipsoid has three main axes. That's three more parameter. So it's six. We can always rotate that sphere, and we had three parameters, so we're at nine. A little bit more, but I won't give you the answer. Now, however, I should warn you, there are some map of this ellipsoid which are not physical. So there is a limit of decoherence here when p goes to one, where you take the whole sphere and map it to the string between 0 and 1 when these things go to 0. Okay? So then you just have the string between 0 and 1. And if you remember our first lecture, I call this a probabilistic classical bit. So now we have a limit of how to go to probabilistic classical bit is just take the decoherent or the dephasing to its maximal value. But then if you look at this, you might say, ha, can you have a quantum operation who takes the sphere and map it to a disk instead of a line between the state 0 and 1? Can you just collapse this thing like that? And it turns out the answer is no. This thing is not completely positive. And this is not an easy way to show it. At least I don't know an easy way. But if somebody gets a really good insight, then tell me. Okay, so we're done for today. Tomorrow I will talk a little bit about generalized measurement. Usually we think about measurements which are projective measurement. Well, when you make a projective measurement on a system which is big, it doesn't look always like a projective measurement once you take the trace. And so that's one piece that comes in. And I want to mention it because sometimes there is some question that you are asking, and if you have these more general measurement, you have a better answer or more efficient answer. So I'll give an example of this. And then I'll talk about state tomography, process tomography, just to give you a rough idea. Finally, give you the number of parameters that you're supposed to have. And I'll talk one comment about fidelity, because I'm going to use that notion of fidelity when I give talk about error correction. Questions?